everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and welcome to What Women Must Know. This is a show empowering you with truthful information so you can make the most informed decisions for yourself, your family, and your community. And as always, I'm so glad you're joining me because there are some important conversations that I have every week on my show, and this week is no exception. So I look forward to being able to share with you inspiration as well as some practical roadmaps to improve the quality of your life. If you are listening for the very first time, I invite you to go to my Facebook page, which is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and that's, it's Cheryl Selman, sorry about that. It's Cheryl Selman. Get confused between that and my website, which is drcherylselman.com, or Facebook page is Cheryl Selman. So I hope you'll join me there, become a part of my community. All of my podcasts are archived both on my Facebook page and also will be emailed to you from the website if you opt in there. And there'll be other information and blogs and updates that I think will really support you and your health and your overall well-being. So please join me either on my Facebook page or on my website. So let's just jump into things. There's lots going on, as we know. The world is changing. It's a time when so much is really unknown. I feel this time is really a time when we're stepping into the unknown. And when we step into the unknown, it's true that so much of how we've defined ourselves or how we lived in the past is no longer the way it will be. So we need to have the skills to navigate in a new world and look at all the new possibilities that are there. So today we're having a really interesting conversation with my guest, Fawn Germer, and we're going to talk about how to win the job you want when you lost the job you need. And here's an interesting statistic for everyone. It is estimated that 40% of all current jobs in the United States will be automated within 10 years. That's a lot to take in. 40% of all current jobs in the U.S. will be automated within 10 years. And we're going to be talking specifically how women are going to be guided through this time, how they can negotiate their lives and their work lives in this time of change and uncertainty, and when so much is being done, at home and remotely. So Fawn's a great guest. Let me just share a little bit about her. She is one of America's most sought-after leadership keynote speakers, a best-selling author, renowned motivational speaker, and a four-time Pulitzer Prize-nominated investigative journalist. And she's the best-selling author of several books as well. She has written for the Miami Herald, the Washington Post, and U.S. News & World Report. Her recent clients include Kraft, NASA, Microsoft, Coca-Cola, Ford Motor Company, and State Farm, amongst others. Her latest book is Coming Back, How to Win the Job You Want When You've Lost the Job You Need. And so relevant to have this conversation today, and I am so happy to welcome Fawn Germer to the show. So hello, Fawn, and welcome.
Well, hi. It's a great pleasure to be here.
I've been looking forward to this conversation because you are really such a powerful force, not only in inspiring and training people, but supporting women and supporting women to step into their true success, their true power, their true purpose. So we have so much to talk about. And I guess we'll just start off with what you've written about in your latest book, Coming Back, what you think is the critical change that's going on that we need to be aware of so we can, as I was saying earlier, negotiate our way through these times. So where would you like to begin?
Well, I think I want to begin with a word you used in another context a little earlier, and that's relevance. Relevance is the one thing that's going to ensure that we can get a career that goes from beginning to end. And yet, so many people just keep relying on the same skills that have made them successful because they know they're doing a good job. and think that that's going to be enough to ensure their continued success, and it's not. So what happens as you advance in your career, the longer you're in a place, the more money you make, hopefully. The more money you make, the more that's expected of you. And people who think they're tech savvy and may not be, that's in, if you're in that category of late Gen X or baby boomer, you're being watched on that because companies want to see that you've still got it. And it's really easy to say that when you start to get sidetracked or even pushed out that you're being discriminated against. But often the problem is you're not relevant. You may say, oh, but I am tech savvy. I can do social media, kind of, sort of. And, oh, I know what artificial intelligence is. But when you have the highest paycheck in the room or one of them, you have to be able to deliver more than anybody else. And unfortunately, technologically, when the millennials hit the workplace, followed by the Gen Zers, you have these people who could do much more with technology, much faster, and they would do it for a lot less money. And that meant that some of the opportunities that we expected would be held for us because of seniority were going to people who were not as experienced, and it was insulting and infuriating, and we couldn't understand it. And by the time we realized we were in trouble, in many cases, it was too late to fix it. We're pushed out of our jobs or put on the slow track. And so we have to chase relevance as we go. And that means that you're constantly adding new skills. You don't have to be a computer programmer, but you do have to know the trends that are coming in your industry, in your profession, and in your specific job, so that as you chart your course forward, you can tell and brand yourself as somebody who is learning on their own, insatiably curious, seeing opportunities for driving the company forward because you're studying and keeping up. And I know sometimes that sounds exhausting, and it probably is for about 2 or 3 months when you're doing your catch-up work, but you have to do it. There's just no way to avoid it if you're planning to justify a higher salary.
So what does it mean to be tech savvy?
Well, it means that you know what's coming, and it means that you've looked at what technology is going to do in your industry, and you know that artificial intelligence is going to be doing X, Y, and Z, which means certain jobs are going to be eliminated, and that robotics will change this or that, and that big data and machine learning are going to help in the following ways. And honestly, a lot of more advanced people know kind of that artificial intelligence is what Alexa does, or some of those smarter, you know, online live chats for customer support, but they haven't really studied what it's going to do to what they're doing. And there are professions that are going to be impacted so substantially, eventually they're not going to be around.
So what are they? This is such an interesting subject, and I'd like us to explore it, Fawn, because I've heard about this. We know that AI is going to be expanding and taking over jobs. But out of your research, give us some insight into what you see happening in the near future.
Well, this is why we have to look at it ourselves. I mean, it's everything from replacing Uber drivers with smart cars that will drive themselves to paralegals who, you know, they just have to program it to file the following brief or whatever, to accountants and financial planners. There's just so many ways that technology is going to replace human beings. And I had one CEO that I interviewed for my book who made the remark, and I knew it was really one of those solid, great quotes, that she spends most of her time researching how to replace people with AI. And, of course, she wanted to review what she had said, and that's the first thing that was stricken out. And journalistically, I didn't feel comfortable with that, but I had to get the release signed, so there that went. But it tells you that this is something that is going to impact you because it saves them money. If they can replace you with something that can be programmed and do it in perpetuity for no additional charge for year after year, they're going to do it. So it's best to know how to use the skills that can't be replaced, like your communication skills, your leadership skills, and how to mesh that with directing that technology so you are the voice of the future. And you can't justify your job anymore by saying that you are the best person for your job today, because that's not enough. They need to know that you're the best person for 5 years from today or 10 years from today. And that the way that you demonstrate that is just constantly upskilling, taking classes that make you current. And the good thing about these classes is that they've got websites, and my two favorite are Coursera.org and edX.org. And this is where you can take classes in all of the technologies we talked about and any other, you know, just thousands of topics. And they're taught from professors at the best institutions in the world. So I took coursework in innovation at MIT for free. You can take something in artificial intelligence from Harvard professor for free. And the beauty of that is it gives you something to talk about that you've learned, so that shows you're current. You have the latest information. And when I did the first course I ever took, there was this great moment because I was all nervous. I was taking the first test, and I wanted to score well. And I suddenly thought, why am I doing that? I have my degrees. I don't need another one, and I don't need an A on this test. I need the knowledge. So pressure's off. All you're doing is learning, and so it then becomes a fun exercise. Once you make the decision that you're going to be relevant, it's very easy to start doing that. You read the right things, the Wall Street Journal, the Harvard Business Review, Inc., Fast Company, Wired, and you don't read every article. Read what interests you, and then read what you think is important. The rest, you just scan the headlines so you know what's going on and can talk about that in conversation at work so they know you are not some old has-been that they need to sideline.
So if you are interested in that site, it's Coursera. I've actually been there, and they have so many interesting courses. It's Coursera.org. So if people want to find out more about Coursera, just go there, and they have free online courses on all subjects out of just interest or business, professional, and they come from universities all over the United States, maybe all over the world. I don't know, but
don't forget the United States
and Ivy League schools, yeah.
Yeah, and don't forget edX.org, which is the same thing, only different institutions, and that is just as great. They are wonderful.
Okay. edX.org. Okay, that's EDX, edX.org. Okay, so the COVID situation has taken many people out of the workplace and into home. Working out of home, I see that with friends and family, that they're doing things they never thought they'd do. They're doing Zoom for personal training. They're doing online for, you know, their therapy, which they never used to do. What do you see this trend portending when people have had to be innovative, work out of home, or do it online? What's your sense of this trend?
Well, that's not going away. You're only going to get more and more of that. And I was on a Zoom call with some senior leaders, and they said the work-at-home movement was accelerated by 9 years. And I don't know how you come across a number like that, but they say by 9 years because of COVID. And suddenly they know that they can save a lot of money if you're working at home. People are generally happier working at home. So you have to find ways to raise your visibility if that's what you're dealing with. And particularly for women, there are other issues because even though we are in 2021, women still bear the brunt of the responsibility of watching for what the kids are doing and managing everything in the house, and there you are building a career, and somebody's pulling on you, hey, Mommy, you've got a lot going on there. So you have to figure out how you're going to lead and be a leader in your own household. The thing about Zooming and all of that for work is there are good ways to expand your network doing that, and it's not, well, I mean, I'm like everybody. I get really sick of it at the end of the day. It's like I want to shut the camera off and just talk. But by and large, it has made it possible to do a lot quicker. And you have to figure it out, figure out how to make it work for you. So I make my living as a keynote speaker, and companies are finding out that they can have big events and do it with a Zoom call and not have people in hotels or pay for food or air transportation. And that's an adjustment as well for me. But I just say figure it out, because it's kind of fun, actually, for me to find a new technology and ways to communicate like that.
You know, I've always worked from home. So for me, having that discipline, working at home, you know, making my office, home office, just like an office, you know, when I go to work, I don't put on the TV, I don't get distracted. I've had that discipline, but I would imagine that's a new learning curve for a lot of people these days. If you're working at home, how to stay focused so you are able to zoom in on your Zoom and not
want to wander
off and watch the game or watch the soap opera or whatever, you know, and not have that discipline to do that work.
Well, my first career was a journalist, and I worked in newsrooms where we had a ton of freedom, and we'd come and go, and I'll get back in there at a certain time of day and bang out our stories, and then the next day come back and do the same thing. And sometimes you were real productive, and sometimes you were really lazy. And then I decided I was going to quit my job to write my first book. And I told myself, self-employment is a privilege that must be earned. So that was my mantra. And I think we can tell ourselves working at home is a privilege that must be earned, meaning that you've got to make the effort to make working at home work for you. So there I was, a very undisciplined person, and I knew I was. And I was going to be responsible for whether I succeeded or failed. It was all on me. And what I learned to do was every day have a roadmap, a list. Every week I knew what I needed to do for the week. Every day I knew what I needed to do for the day. And at the end of the day, I always said, what have I done to move myself toward my goal today? I didn't always clear off my to-do list, but I was always moving in the right direction. Didn't mean I had to be too hard on myself. I always said that my favorite thing about being self-employed was I just loved my boss, because she would say, you know, the weather's great. Maybe you should go out and go kayaking for a while. Because I could stay up and work until 2 in the morning after I got back, and that's been a great life. So I have worked in a work environment and at home. At home is absolutely the best for me, but I don't have children. And I think that is a huge variable for people, and you have to learn. You are the leader. So how are you going to delegate and make things work, and how are you going to work those to-do lists so that you don't go insane? There is always a way to figure this out. And whenever I have to adjust to something, I go to my core coping strategy, and this is whether it is a different change in my career or really more specifically emotionally, because my mom had a stroke when she was 66 and then was paralyzed from then on, and she lived another 20 years. In the last 10, she also had Alzheimer's. And I knew, as she had Alzheimer's, that things were not going to get better. And when she started repeating herself 100 times a day, I knew the day would come when I wouldn't hear her voice. So I just learned to love the sound of her voice and the fact that she was trying to tell me something. And then when that happened, then I just learned to love the fact that we could spend time together and still love each other. And then when she didn't know who I was, at least I knew who she was. And then at least she was alive, right? And so instead of focusing on what I had lost, I found a way to do three things: accept, cope, and adapt as quickly as possible so that I was happy in a situation that many people would find utterly depressing. And I have to tell you, I had great years with my mother because I always worked to accept, cope, and adapt. And that's what's on you as you face different changes. The better you are and the more agile you are with accept, cope, and adapt, whether it's new technology, new demands, or something emotional, the happier you can be, the faster you move toward happiness. So that's my core strategy.
That is so profound. I think that guidance that you just gave is the most powerful key to resilience in life. In life, because life is always going to be about change. And if we do not have the ability to adapt, to move in a situation that is never solid, it appears solid from our perceptions, but it's fluid all the time. Every moment our body is changing, right? We're in constant change. And there will be times in our lives when the change will be huge, whether it's a loss
right.
of a loved one or a loss of a job. And so that resilience in being able to adapt to change, accept that if you're in a situation of change, how do you move through it? How do you see the positive in it? I think this is like critical. This is a key, isn't it? Wouldn't you say, Fawn, that this is what makes the difference between people who give up in despair, get depressed, and those that see opportunities and choose to take the challenge and create something new?
Right, Dr. Cheryl, you nail it. I mean, that's it. It's that people either give in to the negativity or just say, wait a minute, there's an opportunity here for the person who adapts the fastest. So I'm going to adapt the fastest and get that opportunity. You're not going to stop the change. Even if you hate it and you're mad about it, it's tough. It's coming. And what was that Justin Trudeau said when he was at Davos? He said, never in history have things changed so quickly, and never in history will things again move so slowly. And that's the truth, because we're changing, and it's faster, faster, faster. And the other thing is, people get sick of proving themselves. You want to be there. You're never there. And I'm sorry, that is what has happened in the workplace. The workplace is not a kind and gentle environment, and I wish it were, but it's not. So we have to just kind of get over that and put it in perspective. The workplace is your work. It is not you. What matters is who you are as a human. So always have that perspective that you have so much more to you than your job. That makes your job a lot more easy to deal with. Your job's going to throw things at you that you may not be ready for or not enjoy, but it's only a part of your life. It's not your life.
I find that resilience is developed. I look at skills such as meditation, personal development, where we are able to find strengths within us, have tools that tap us into the great potential that is always there within us. I think these are really critical during times of rapid change and uncertainty, which we are in. And I know that those skills, those tools, those practices that I have worked with over the years are really the strength that I draw upon to help me in this time of change as well. So I encourage people to do that. Yeah. Yes.
No.
Yes, I'm very grateful.
I feel like I wish you lived in my hometown, because I think we'd go out and we'd have some fun, because it's like people who just realize we're here on this earth to learn. We are not here on this earth to have one job title or one singular purpose. We're here to learn. And the only way to do that is to just get a good, tough shell and be resilient. And instead of, getting stuck on things that you can't change, find ways to work with them. My dad, my hero, he's gone now. But my dad was a Holocaust survivor who never looked behind him. He's the most optimistic person I ever met in my life. Once, when I was staying out at the beach, and by where a lot of my friends were there, and my dad came out to go to breakfast with us, they said, "Can he come back for dinner? He just made us feel so good about ourselves because he was so positive." But at that time, here's my father. He's got a wife at home who is paralyzed. He's the main caregiver. It's a very demanding, difficult situation. And he always had hope and optimism. And when something would happen with my mom's health, as it did many times over 20 years, where something happened that required a huge adjustment for maybe more physical therapy, or there was some crisis, the one thing my dad would do, he would be very rattled for about a day. And then I would see him writing things down, and what he was doing was figuring out his new routine, how he was going to deal with that routine. And what he was doing was he was accept, coping, and adapting. And no matter what was going on or how bad, my dad would always say, "Better days are coming." But you knew they weren't going to be better in terms of what we were facing, but they were going to be better because we knew that we would be able to face that. And that is where we got our strength and resilience. Boy, what a great thing to have. Because it means you really can deal with what life throws at you and still be happy. And I heard so many people in 2020 saying, "2020 is the worst year. I can't wait till 2020 is over. F 2020. And then I would always say, "Well, 2021 could be worse." And, looking at what happened on January the 6th, kind of, right? And so I just, I don't write off a year of your life. I've gotten year after year, and suddenly you look in the mirror and you're like, "Wait, how'd I get to be this age?" And I learned you don't throw a year away ever. You don't throw a day away. You live your life no matter what. So if you're facing adversity in your career and have to go through some changes to make yourself relevant and viable so you can get work, I've got a plan for that. But before you dig into that, dig into your soul and find out a way how to make this moment something where you're still living a positive life of purpose no matter what you're facing. And be hopeful and know in your gut that better days are coming.
Fawn, what do you think allowed your father to have that resilient way of living life through obviously, horrendous circumstances earlier in his life, the Holocaust survivor? What do you think he was born with it? Do you think it came from his family? Is it just who the soul is? What are your thoughts that made him so resilient?
I never met my grandfather, but I understand my grandfather was not a walk in the park, and my grandmother was, in my mind, she was harsh, but now in hindsight, it's like, of course she was harsh. Her husband was put in a concentration camp, and she had to find a way to get him out, which is, I wish I knew the details, but she did do that, and had to come to this country with nothing after they had been people of great means, and it was a desperate young life that my dad had, and I don't know what made him that way. I just know how lucky I was to be his daughter, so that I could learn that. And so I know I got it from him, but I don't know where he got it from. And he always had it. Right. And he had, you know, this is the thing. When he died, and I was thinking as I was writing his eulogy about how when I was young, my dad was a really good guy. And then I got a little older, and my dad was a really, really good guy. And then I got a little older, and he was a great guy. And then I got a little bit older, and he was a really great guy. And then by the time he died, he was just a mythically great guy. And I realized he was always a work in progress, and that he started out of a point of goodness, and that I try to always be a better person every day. And when he died, I thought, I'm not near as good of a person as him, but I still can be working toward that and never give up on goodness. You know, he just was always trying to be better for other people. And so I'm on that track. I'm on the Fred Germer program.
What a blessing to have such a man as your father.
Uh-huh.
What a blessing that was. That is, he still is an inspiration for us now, as well as you. Right.
You know, there's this video.
Yeah, that's so special.
Yeah, there's a video. He was in the hospital. It wasn't maybe a couple months before he died. And he knew I was coming to visit him, but I walk in there, and all of a sudden he goes, Fawn, I love you so much. And I think how lucky I am that I had my video thing on with my phone at that moment, but how lucky to have someone love me that much. And I think about that, and for the people that I love, I want them to know that I love them that much. And maybe we can all spread a little bit of Fred out there, love big, hard, deep. And if that's your legacy, isn't that something? I mean, when he was 85 years old, he was still a licensed pharmacist. But and that was just an endearing thing about him, but it was that they wanted him working there because he made people feel good about being at work.
Mm.
So maybe that is our bigger charge here while we're here on this earth, is to just keep growing into better versions of ourselves and stop getting stuck in the minutiae of the day and instead focus on our strength and our joy and our purpose. And then when we die, then we leave a really good legacy. Because it's not our job, it's our soul.
And I think that's exactly why we're here. And this focus on career and job often can take us off track, because our purpose on this earth should be an expression of our gifts and talents, and find ways that we can generate a living from it, which is putting our purpose first rather than our survival first. And that may sound easier said than done, but there's so many stories of inspiration of people who really made that decision that they wanted to live their joy in their life and their talents and their gifts, and forged their way into life to have that success. You know, I guess I'm one of them, because I remember, Fawn, when I was graduating from university, and I don't know why, maybe I've just always been a bit of an outlier, but I decided I was never going to work at a job. I just decided that I wasn't ever going to hold a job. I think the only job I ever held, I was a counselor at a camp one summer, and I worked at Roy Rogers Restaurant.
All right, we all have one of those
times. but that was a decision I made, and then I just started the journey, and had experiences, and I was in the Peace Corps, and I did a lot of traveling earlier in my life, but it was a decision that I never really did hold a 9-to-5 job. I forged my way through life and found what I loved to do, and was able to create my own life, my own source of income. But that can be scary for many people. That's not how our society has conditioned us. But when we're in these kinds of changes, this is where we need to reevaluate everything. It's like 52 pickups for many people, isn't it? intention were there.
So I'm pretty sure you said something that I would really have wanted to hear, but it was breaking up so much I couldn't understand a single word of what you just said.
Oh, my gosh. All right. That's what happens when we are on the line from Australia. So if people listening have missed those great words of wisdom, well, what can I say?
Oh, wait. Now you're sounding good.
Well, I'll just switch my phone to the other side. Yeah, I just wanted to say that, in essence, that when we are in times of uncertainty and change, it's an opportunity that could allow us to really move into a new direction in life that brings us much greater fulfillment and joy and service to others as well.
Absolutely. And,
did you
and
hear
the
that?
Other thing is this.
Okay.
I did. I heard every word of that. So that's good. I totally agree. And
good.
And this is a moment where people can be very frustrated, but in moments when other people are frustrated and giving up, you find your greatest opportunity to succeed and grow. Perfect opportunity. You know, it's like I always look at things as how is it going to grow me, but also you can create great success while you're growing.
So I want to get back into some more practical stuff. Out of your research, for those that are looking for directions of careers that are going to be relevant in the future, whether they are millennials or whether they're, you know, people in their 50s looking to change careers to something more satisfying, what do you see as directions or areas of work, or if you want to call it careers, that are going to continue to be important and relevant?
Just depends on your industry. Really, you have to look up individually your interests and look up the trends. So I would hate to give people a list of the 10 things that they should go into, because then something's going to be invented and make them irrelevant. What I'm saying is we have certain core skills already that are going to be smarter than artificial intelligence and the other stuff, and that is we can communicate. So anything where you can use your communication and leadership skills will be an advantage to you, because a computer is not going to be able to lead people. And the other thing being that younger people are not quite as adept at dealing with face-to-face communication, because they've done a lot through texting and it's all written. And as we know, that's not always the best way to communicate. So if you've got good communication skills, that's very useful. But again, it's not enough to have those skills unless you've figured out how to make them work within the definition of what's happening with change today. So if I were going to say what's a great profession to be in, I'm probably not the one to ask that, because, you know, maybe I am, because my first career was in newspapers, and that sure petered out, but I did pivot before that happened. I think that you do need to see the handwriting on the wall, though, and that might be a good thing to talk about for a second, because when the Internet came out and I would see all these editors, they were saying, well, we do it better. They can never do what we do because we give more depth. We will always be the first choice for news. And I knew in an instant, the minute I started seeing some of those aggregate sites that were done on topics, it's like, oh boy, we're in trouble. And fortunately, I figured out a new way so I never had to go back to the newsroom after I left to write that first book. That was a very lucky thing. But a lot of people were so terrified that they just hung on. And people, you know, newspapers now, you have some people who have made it through round after round after round of either layoffs or buyouts. And they're doing the jobs that 10 people used to do. And they just are hoping to make it 5 or 6 or just 9 more years until they retire. And they're deluding themselves. Maybe they'll make it, but isn't it a lot smarter to find a way to use your skills right now so that you know you've got something that's going to sustain you? And another huge mistake that people make is that they think, I'll just keep my head down and sit this one out. There's no way to sit anything out. You're in it now. You have to figure out where your profession's going and then come up with a plan. Now, the other thing I want to say, I think the universe gives you all of the information that you need, and you just have to listen. So I quit to write my first book. All these women that I interviewed said that the best way to be successful is take risks. So I quit my job, wrote my book. Book got rejected everywhere. Seemed like I was going to be a miserable failure. While I'm persevering, somebody says to me, well, you ought to think about making, about being a professional speaker. And I said, you get paid to do that? She goes, yeah. She goes, they make good money. And I looked it up, and sure enough, they did. So that's how I became a speaker, was somebody said that. And then I was going to be speaking, well, I went to speak in Dallas, and there was this man from China who was on a panel that I was moderating, and he asked me what I thought of China. And anyhow, we got in this conversation, and he said that I should do some investigating or some interviews on leadership in China. And I said, well, I've never been there. He goes, you should go. I said, take me, because he was a senior executive, right? He goes, well, follow up. Now, when someone asks you to follow up, they're testing you to see if you actually will. So that when people call me and they want some of my time, I will say, yeah, can you follow up in 3 weeks? Because then I know if they do, they really want my time. Usually they don't. So, good, I didn't waste my time. And he said, follow up. And so then he arranges this big speaking tour for me in China. And he was he was the executive vice president of Michaels Corporation, the craft stores. So I get to speak all over China, and I know I'm going there, and it's only because he said follow up, I followed up. But then when the universe gives you a moment, dive into it. So that going to China, I had my website translated into Chinese, and I made Chinese business cards, because the universe will tell you everything you need to know, but you have to respond. So when you're uncertain what to do, make sure you keep listening, because it'll come.
And wow, that's a great story.
Here's what makes that such a great story. I was an investigative reporter. I was the kind of reporter that public officials literally, I can still see this, they ran to get away from me. Or they called me the B word. You know, I mean, it's just, that was my first career, was very important work, all negative. Have you ever heard of an investigative reporter becoming a motivational speaker who lives in the realm of positivity and all of that? It doesn't happen. But the universe put everything in front of me, and suddenly my life started to make sense. And what a great turn. And so don't pressure yourself. You may not find the answer immediately or in a book, and do something that keeps you busy until you actually hear it. But I believe in every case, you will hear what you need to know.
You know, this conversation to me is so inspirational because it really is our conversation, what we're sharing with my community, is the ability to remember that we are here for a purpose, that we need to take risks, because if we are courageous, what appears to be courage, you know, with hindsight, maybe it's obvious that we needed to step forward, we can live a much more satisfying, successful, purposeful life. And it's getting out of the fear that we're, you know, not going to have enough, that we need to be the illusion of security. That's such an illusion, security. There's only one form of security. We have to trust in ourselves and in the connection that we have. And I love that you jumped out. Whatever happened with that book? So you couldn't find a publisher.
Oh, that's
but
the Oprah
what happened?
Book. I just persevered. It was hugely successful. But I mean, what you just said about security being in ourselves, I just said on the radio an hour ago, and I want to tell you why that is so significant. You missed out because you didn't work in an office, because you didn't have the joy of working for a boss hole. And I had a boss hole who decided that he wanted to get in my way. He didn't like strong women, and one day he said, you think you're going to be a columnist? you'll never be a columnist. You'll never be more than you are right now, a reporter. And I did a typically female thing, which is spend 2 years trying to get this guy to approve of me and like me. And, of course, he never did. And I did get a promotion, and then he had risen up even higher, and he revoked my promotion. And then finally came the moment where it was humiliating, and I said, he's the problem. And I called the editor of the newspaper back in Tampa who had been trying to recruit me for 4 years. So I was out in Denver. So I called the guy in Tampa. I said, look, if you're going to do this, you got to do it right now. And they put an offer together in 2 days for me so that I could leave. And I was having trouble hitting the trigger on that decision. I mean, I worked for a jerk. But I kept saying to myself, well, I have a union-protected job. I can't be fired. I get 5 weeks of vacation. I get good money, good health care, 401K. I get to live in beautiful Colorado and have a ton of friends. And a friend said to me these words, which are so powerful in my world. She said, don't let security be your dangerous anchor. And I said, well, but I've gotten, she cut me again. She goes, don't let security be your dangerous anchor. She said it 3 times. So I quit and I went to Tampa. And struggled in management because I wasn't real tactful and diplomatic. I was a reporter, so that's what led me to write my book and all of that. But in the meantime, you had all these people working for that jerk and afraid to leave because they had good benefits. And some liked their jobs, but there were many who didn't. And they just stayed there because it was union protected. They made good money. And I think 8 years ago, the paper went out of business. So, you know, they thought they had a secure deal and that I was going into insecurity. And instead, I was the one who had security because the security was within me. It's exactly what you said. We are our own security. It's not coming from another person or another job. We can do everything on our own, but we have to believe in ourselves that we're in charge of it.
Absolutely, and that to me is really the most important thing out of our conversation today is to really inspire everyone listening that is our greatest strength. And life is all about change. You know, the only thing certain in life is that there's going to be change.
Right? Yeah.
How do you feel comfortable with change? How are you able to ride? You know, it's like riding the river of change. And I have to go back to, you know, understanding that we, you know, unless you're born like your father with this innate optimism and positivity, we have to cultivate it. Most of us need to cultivate it. The good news is we can cultivate that quality. But that's the quality that is going to keep us buoyant in life.
Well, the more you do it, it's just like having uncomfortable conversations. I always coach women on that. Like, you know, that's the one thing that stops us is that we're afraid to have an uncomfortable conversation, and it takes 3 to 15 minutes, so just shut up and have it. But the more you do it, the easier it gets. The first time you just hold your breath and you say something uncomfortable, and then it's okay, you live. And then now I have an uncomfortable conversation, easy peasy. I just think, oh, I need an uncomfortable conversation today. And it's quick and it's easy. And the thing about change is it's inevitable. You have no choice but to learn to be adaptive. So the more you resist, the more miserable you're going to be. And you just have to believe in yourself and tell yourself the right things. I am a huge believer in affirmations, and I write about some of that in the book, because if you expect trouble, you're going to find it. But if you just say, I can handle this, I've got this, I'm going to kill this, I am going to win, I'm not done, then if you give yourself messages like that, you believe them. And if you believe them, it results in great performance and opportunity, and you're happier.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's wonderful. It's such an inspirational conversation we're having here, Vaughn. I so appreciate that. In the last few minutes that we have, is there something else you would like to share with all our listeners?
Well, yeah, I think I want to talk about my bad feet. We good for that? Because
okay,
I have
we're
bad
good.
Okay. I have bad feet, but I like to walk long, long distances. And so I'll go to the beach, and I might walk 10 miles or 13 miles, but by around mile 7, my feet start to hurt, and they hurt bad. And I have learned, and the story I'm telling right now has nothing to do with me and my feet and the beach. It's really of you and every time you feel like you're hitting the wall. But I've learned that when my feet start to hurt, if I take one more step and then one more step and then one more step and one more step, sooner or later, I get to where I need to go. I always get where I need to go by just taking the next step. And that's what you have to remember. One more step, and then the next, and then the next. And if you don't know what the steps are, just start writing some things down that you could do. You know, if you're looking for a job, you write down 30 minutes of LinkedIn, 3 times a week, do video coffee with networking people. And, you know, I don't know, just make your list. No matter what you're doing for change in your life, make a list so you always have another step to take. And when things get rough, you don't know how close you are to turning the corner until you actually turn the corner. So the only way to get to that point is to keep taking the next step until you get there, knowing, and I mean this, you have to know, you will get there.
And I would imagine it's really important to surround yourself with supportive people and cut loose of people who are negative and try to stop you or, you know, kind of align with your fears and negativities.
Yeah. I mean, I say that all the time. If other people are struggling, then that gives you permission to struggle and think that that's the reality that awaits you. And especially now, if you're having trouble, don't surround yourself with people who are struggling because you will absorb that and that becomes your reality. Instead, be around people that give you hope and strength. Doesn't mean that you're mean to people who are struggling, but you have to control the messages that you're going to process.
Yeah, that's great. You know, I so appreciate this conversation, Vaughn. I think that we have great opportunities now. We may not see them. They may not have revealed themselves yet, but they're there. If we keep setting our intentions, our goals, if we keep strengthening the courage within us, if we keep learning how to be adaptive, if we go to places like you mentioned earlier, Corsica or edX, where we can learn, be inspired. This is the time. If we just look at the chaos going around us, we can get absorbed in that energy of fear. But if we are able to pull back and understand that this is a time of profound empowerment and transformation, if that is our focus and if we cultivate it, there are huge possibilities. And I say that for everyone listening, and I say that for myself as well, to remember that this could be the moment where we are liberated on many levels.
I've really enjoyed this time with you, and I hope the people listening have enjoyed it well, because I just feel like I have found another sister in life hearing you. We just share so many of the same thoughts. It's very validating. I just love you already.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. I love you too. It's just been a great love fest here between us, Vaughn, because we are aligned in our message and in our purpose in life, and we're doing our best in our own way to share it and support other people. So let me just give your website out if people want to learn more about you. Of course, absolutely get your book, Coming Back, How to Win the Job You Want When You've Lost the Job You Need. That's Vaughn's latest book.
and go to Fawn's website, sign up there. It's Fawn Germer, GERMER.com. Anything else you want to add as far as people contacting you or
I'm going to send you
services
a link
you're offering?
Yeah, that you can post so that they can get. I've got a couple of downloads, one's on recharging your career during COVID and the other's on taking the next step. So I hope they would enjoy that. And I love hearing from people. So please, please feel free to email me and continue the conversations. I'm rooting for everybody. Yeah, we're in it together, and we can get through all of this.
Well, we're so glad you're there rooting for us. That makes all of us feel so much better having that energy behind us. And if people go to my Facebook page or to my website or just go to download the archive from prn.fm, then the links to all of those special gifts that Fawn is giving us will be there. So thank you again so much, Fawn, for the work you do. I encourage everyone to read Fawn's latest book, Coming Back, How to Win the Job You Want When You've Lost the Job You Need. Go to fawngermer.com. And just blessings to you, Fawn, and the great work you're doing. It's been an absolute pleasure having this conversation.
You know, back at you. You're doing really good work here, and I'm just thrilled to be on your show.
Thank you. Thank you all for listening. Join me again next week on What Women Must Know. Remember, I have another podcast called The Love Code on PRN.fm. Opt into my Facebook page, website, and you'll get all those archived shows. And until next week, always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.